What do you mean your DNA and your P&L, your profit loss has a line item for culture? And I'm not talking about Taco Tuesdays. I'm not talking about vacations or more time off or doing, you know, happy hours on Fridays. That should be done anyways, right? I'm talking about how you structure building great culture or things like transparency, the way that people are paid, the way that people are compensated, not just in time and money, and how that influences your culture and the people you hire, what I call POUs, people like us.
Hi, everyone. This is Joshua Hoffman and Alex Garashenko, and welcome to another episode of the Masters in Marketing Agency podcast, where we deconstruct the why and how agency owners found their success, and in season three, discuss how to build a community and referral network. Today, I have Aaron Gare, the CEO of GDX Studios, a full-service experiential marketing studio that takes a holistic approach to its services and engages consumers in bold and dynamic ways. Welcome, Aaron.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
So I want to start off with something that the two of us at least have in common. And I know, Alex, you know, with hockey a little bit as well, but we both started as former wrestlers, albeit you've had a lot more success than me. You won states in high school, back-to-back state community college championships, and then actually wrestled for the University of Oklahoma. I can just stop there and we can just end the podcast there.
Yeah. Well, actually, right now, those listeners are probably going, I don't know any smart wrestlers. So thank you, Alex. You just screwed all of us.
Yeah, that's right. So I guess the thing I'd like to understand is what kind of life lessons or skills did you learn from wrestling that you still use today?
Yeah, I think everybody uses those, you know, sports references and reflects back. And, you know, what I was really fortunate is that wrestling's an individual sport, and so you really have to find that drive within yourself, and you also have that ability to be as good as you can be. You know, I've had a lot of people say, you know, well, I was great, or I could have been great, but I wasn't on the best team or the best situation, and you know, I'm sympathetic to that. There's really no excuses in wrestling. There's nowhere to hide. To really serve me well in life and in business, you know, you go through just incredible pain. And, you know, everybody thinks that, you know, I always agree that all sports are tough, and especially when you compete at the highest level, and the training, the dedication that you go through is, you know, it's really daunting and it's really tough, and it served us well in our life for anybody that's competed at a high level. The one thing about wrestling that is a little different than any sport that I know is that you have to lose weight. And that takes a whole different level of mental focus. You imagine you go to a football field or you train on a hot, sweaty day with all your gear, but you can't go drink a jug of water. In fact, you can't even drink a cup of water. So the mental challenge in wrestling is really served me well. And it's beyond the, you know, the competition. It's the mental capacity to get through just really tough mental challenges, you know?
Yeah, I think still to this day, out of all the sports and workouts that I've done, I think a wrestling match has been the hardest and most tiring thing. And then not to go, you know, too far in this direction, but those tournaments, when you have four matches in a day, I mean, You feel 100% cooked after one match, and then you got to recoup after, you know, an hour. And then get back out there. It was unlike anything I've ever done. And to your point, you know, I've seen JV wrestlers in 1 year become a top wrestler, you know, winning percentage of 750 or whatever. Like you really can, if you put your head down and really focus on wrestling, it is something that, you know, in 1 year you can really get, and packing on a few muscles never hurts either, but so I think, you know, for me, wrestling was very much a culture and a brotherhood. I think it was the closest team that I've ever actually been a part of. But we spoke before, and you actually mentioned the word culture. You say it is very overused. And people ask, you know, how do you replicate culture all the time, things like that. So rather than asking you how to replicate culture, and you can go into that after if you want, I'd actually like to know what you think most people get wrong.
Gosh, you know, this is such a huge subject and one that is really near and dear to me, and I enjoy talking about. And you know, I always tell my people or people that work for me or people that you know come to me about culture, you know, that it has to be in the DNA of your business if you really truly want to have great culture. And I really humbly, I think I have the right to win. That's another thing I say is, you know, we're pretty disciplined about not raising our hand if there is something that is not our core competency, but we're also very adamant about raising our hand high when it's our strength. And when it comes to culture, you know, humbly, I'll go toe to toe with anybody. It is in our blood. It's something that is part of our P&L. And I think, you know, I've just recently had a company retreat and had some new employees that had told their stories about working for successful companies and corporations and Fortune 500s. And, you know, was yet again humbled at these companies that all had that same, Wes, we're strong in culture. And I've had companies pursue, you know, buying our company or investing in our company, saying that culture is important to them. And you only need to find out later that it's just all superficial. And you know, there's really an easy way to uncover that. Are they truly who they say they are? Which is hard. You take people at face value. We always say we start with trust. We start with yes. We start with belief that people do things, have good intentions. But if you really scratch a little further, you'll find out that very few really live and walk the walk. And you know, when I use the word culture, which is overdone because so many people say that, as you said, is, you know, I always stop people and say, I don't say that loosely. Our P&L and our DNA is dictated by culture, and I don't know very many companies. What does that mean? What do you mean your DNA and your P&L, your profit loss has a line item for culture? Yeah. And I'm not talking about Taco Tuesdays. I'm not talking about vacations or more time off or doing, you know, happy hours on Fridays. You know, that is, you know, that should be done anyways, right? I'm talking about how you structure building great culture are things like transparency, the way that people are paid, the way that people are compensated, not just in but time and money, and how that influences your culture and the people you hire, what I call POUs, people like us. You know, we just had a retreat with all kinds of different, you know, sizes and colors and backgrounds, income levels and demographics and geographics, but yet they all have a common thread that even they didn't even know until they really understood the DNA of people, of what makes people tick, like things like selflessness, things like getting joy out of others winning. You know, you might not know that from a person that is 22 years old that lives in New York and is single in an apartment with a bunch of his college buddies, but I'm maybe a 60-year-old woman in accounting. How does that kid have anything to do with a POU? And am I a POU? But then when you get a little further, you find out, wow, the fundamentals of who they are as a person are the same philosophies and fundamentals that I have. So how you hire, how you recruit, the environment you build, how you pay them, and how you have the transparency as a business owner are all keys to building amazing culture.
You mentioned, you know, I have little notes on here, and each note has like a chapter, you know, and I think you literally in that one answer kind of hit every single one. So actually what I want to do is basically kind of separate a little bit of what you said, and you might repeat kind of what you just said, but you mentioned culture, obviously mindset, transparency, and PLUs. And I literally have a chapter pretty much for each of those. So to start to break them down, you know, just to squeeze the grape a little bit more. And the last thing on the culture side, you were actually interviewed last year for a Medium article, and they asked you for advice to offer to employees who want to future-proof the organization. And you mentioned, just like you just said, transparency and ownership are the two words that you said there. I don't know if you remember, but you know, and their compensation needs to be value based. And again, you kind of got into that, but I want to double click on that and kind of dive a little further. So can you start to explain kind of what that means exactly?
Yeah, I mean, to make it simple, it really focuses on what I call buckets: the personal bucket, the professional bucket, and the financial bucket. It's really the fundamentals of every decision we make as a business, the environment that we build, the enterprise value we build. Almost every decision goes back to the buckets, both for our people as well as ourselves as a business, right? So we find that if we create the best environment that helps people win on those three points, then we're going to have a great company. And so what does that mean personally, professionally, financially? Well, professionally, we want to create an environment that you're learning every day. Well, not every day, but you're at least learning or feel like you're learning, or give you the opportunity to learn and create self-worth, value, increase your resume, your marketability. Whether you work at GDX or not, we want you to be able to say, man, I'm smarter and more valued in the marketplace than I ever was before. I learned things that I could never learn at another business. And I'm more valued to my company or to the marketplace, whatever that is. So we want to create an environment that is very entrepreneurial and letting you grow as a professional. The second thing is, we want you to have that ability to make money, right? And create self-worth, so that you have the flexibility to create a great environment. So that isn't the personal bucket, you know, or how can we create a great personal environment for somebody? Well, that work-life balance, you know, so you say, man, I'm learning a lot, but my life at home sucks. So it's actually has to go hand in hand. You have to fill that personal bucket. You know, it's funny. Again, going back to this last week, because it's so relevant, I had two individuals that are just studs. They are amazing, dynamic, smart, PLUs. They are the profile of what we look for and what we hired. And I told them both in front of their peers in the whole company, I said, you guys failed this year. And they're just, whoa, what do you mean? And everybody's like, wow, these two failed? I said, yeah. I said, one person here in particular hasn't taken a vacation all year. And the other person said they were almost proud of the fact that they were so slammed they hadn't taken a vacation all year. And the truth is, their heart was in the right place. They didn't want to let anybody down because they're in a great culture. And what they were doing is they were letting everybody down, because we're not there for the battle. We're there for the war. I need you to take a vacation. I need you to re-energize the batteries. I mean, we work to improve our life and our families' lives. You don't work to work. It's still called work. It's not called fun. So why didn't you go on vacation? What? And if it'll never be because of me, it'll always be because of you. And so when they found out that their whole team said, shame on you, I would have helped you. I would have picked up the bag. I would have done the work. Why didn't you take the damn vacation? Because I need you to come back and help me win the war, right? So that is super important to us, is making sure you're living that work-life balance and filling that personal bucket, losing weight, running a marathon, getting married, having kids, buying that first house, whatever that is for you. We want to help create the environment so you're able to achieve that. And then, you know, the last one is we want to make money, right? And maybe not money, but we want to create the value that enables us to live a better quality of life. So we want to work for a company that helps us recognize and embrace value. We want to work for an entrepreneurial company that gives us the flexibility and the autonomy to fill our financial bucket, the last one, right? So if we're work for a company that cultivates and endorses your intellect to go create value for yourself and for the company, and we create a P&L or a comp plan that enables you to benefit from that financially you're going to be in a happy place, right? Wouldn't it be great to work somewhere where as you create value, you can then create, and I'm not talking about taking out the trash or doing the windows or, you know, plugging in the computer or turning the lights off. You should be doing that anyways. I'm talking about real value. And everybody knows what that is, real value. And that doesn't mean maybe a new client or new sales. It could be new software, it could be uncovering a new employee, a new colleague, right? There's all kinds of things that you can do to create value, and everybody can create value, from the account bookkeeper on up to the secretary, you name it. Everybody has the opportunity to create value in our company and harness that value.
Yeah, you know, I can't tell if you're this hard, disciplined college wrestler state guy or this soft guy who cares about his employees and is empathetic and everything like that. I kid, obviously, because I think truly what you're showing, and we've talked to people on both sides of the spectrum there. And I think really what you're sharing is that it's not either or. You know, you can be a disciplined person and still care about your employees and actually do things a little bit different than just, again, you know, kind of repeating you, but just saying the word culture and doing pizza or Taco Tuesdays and things like that. So I think that's, I just think that's really commendable. And one more thing on the PLUs, you know, and maybe again that you already answered this, but is there a difference or an example between how a PLU can handle something versus someone who's clearly not a PLU?
Yeah, I have a whole, you know, list of definitions. Most of the time, PLUs come from humble beginnings, although, you know, they come from working class families. But that's not the case all the time. I've hired amazing employees that are big hearted and confident, but not arrogant. That have all the traits of a PLU, that come from wealthy families or well to do, educated families. So, but they're all very similar in that they're big-hearted. They believe in the power of more than just themselves, you know, the sum of all the parts, you know, kind of refresh my memory. What is it? The sum of all the parts is greater than them separately, I guess, something to that reference. But you know, they believe in that teamwork. They're very confident, but they're not arrogant. They know who they are. If they fall and trip in the middle of a room, they'll laugh harder than you will. They know who they are. They wear their heart on their sleeve. They're very transparent. They're always willing, want to learn. They're selfless. They just love helping others. And they also know that helping others indirectly will help them in some way, right? They're very entrepreneurial. They're risk takers. They don't mind being the first one to raise their hand. That's also very, very, very hard to find. Ones that, you know, I believe everybody wants to be an entrepreneur as a kid or as an adult, whether it's own your own bar or restaurant or own a company or be a CEO, but they just don't have maybe the means or the intellect or the network. But I think everybody kind of has that little bit of entrepreneur in them. And these PNLs have a lot of that entrepreneurial in them. So I want to create the atmosphere that gives them the flexibility and autonomy to be an entrepreneur. And that's what a PLU thrives.
You've been doing too much end of year books. I can tell because you accidentally called it a PNL instead of a PLU once.
Oh, good.
I can tell you've been talking to the accountants and the finance people a lot lately.
People like us, let's be clear.
Right. No. Every other time you said PLU, one time you said PNL. And Alex, right before that, your next question, you know, again, you can just say the answer is the opposite of what you just said, but like, can you share telltale signs of someone who's not a PLU? And the reason I ask that is because we've actually had this conversation on a few episodes of essentially people to watch out for, you know, the people that are going to bring the firm down. And what's the phrase, you know, hire slowly, fire quickly, I think. You know, identifying these people that, you know, I know this is an aggressive way of saying it, but tend to be a cancer in the company. And once they start to complain, then more people start to complain. So, I guess the question again was, you know, is there any telltale signs of someone who's not a PLU?
The first thing is humility is really big. And I also think that, you know, when you're interviewing people, for them to to be transparent with, one of the first questions I might ask is, what do you suck at? You know, that's one of I attribute my success to, is I know what I suck at, and I try to find people that are good at what I suck at. So, you know, recognizing that not everybody's perfect and that everybody has things they need to work on, you know, just shows transparency, confidence, yet humility. That one question, right? I'm kind of a terrible interviewer, because I say this all the time, because I see all the best in people. And I'm like, maybe like most corporate America, it's hard to fire, because I hope and believe that a lot of the reason is that you see the best in people and you believe you can help them. And it's, you know, it's not maybe, I know there are people out there that say, well, gosh, I've invested so much time and money in this person, I can't afford for them not to succeed. But that's not, shouldn't be the driver, right? I know I'm one of those people. I keep people too long. That's why I let PLUs do my hiring and firing, because they will ostracize you very quickly if you can't keep up in a PLU atmosphere, high culture atmosphere, and they will recognize it very, very quickly. So humility, transparency, knowing your weaknesses, not being scared to identify those weaknesses, is some of the quick traits I find. Humility is huge, that I find in people that don't have that are most likely sales. You know, we know that especially in sales, right? How can you find someone that is driven? And most salespeople are very me. It makes them great, but also it's their weakness, their best traits, their worst trait. We all have the same thing, I find. My best trait's my worst trait. So I think that finding that unique person and that understands the value in bringing a bunch of smart people together, and that the good will come, is a true PLU.
And how do the PLUs play into the value of the organization? You had previously talked about on our discovery call, enterprise value, and the way you described it, I thought it was really deep. And we even had other people on our show who asked about enterprise value, wanted us to cover this topic. So I'm interested to hear your thoughts about enterprise value and how PLUs play into it.
You know, I think that, you know, one of the things to focus on the buckets is, you know, we talk about how we can create this great atmosphere that helps fill buckets. But the second half of that is they have to fill buckets for the company. So it has to be equitable. And that's where I think a lot of people miss. And this makes your employee reviews so easy. For anybody. You sit down and if you talk to an employee and you say, listen, how did we do as a company? Did we create a good atmosphere for you to live? Did you take those vacations? We help them keep score. Last year you did 10 days. Did you do more this year? You said you were going to lose the weight or do the marathon or visit grandma and grandpa or travel Europe. What, you know, how'd we do? Right. And, you know, hopefully you get a 10 out of 10. Most of the time we do. And if we don't, then, hey, great. We need to work. Where can we do better? Right. So then we do the financial bucket. Everybody wants to make more money, right? Everybody. But do you work for a company and is it clear on how you can create value and achieve financial success or flexibility? And that's my job. You know, I can't just write you a check, but I can create an atmosphere that gives you the ability. Is that very clear? And, you know, hopefully you get a 10 out of 10, you know, or 8 out of 10 or whatever you can on each of those buckets. Then when you're done doing that, you then say, okay, how did you do for us? And I've had salespeople say, well, what do you mean? I've killed it for you. I've made the company all kinds of money financially. And we say, great. You get a 10 out of 10. You get a 10 out of 10 because you did an awesome job of filling our financial bucket. And then we get to the next one and find out, but your culture sucks. You don't know anybody. You don't care anybody. You don't want to know anybody. You are all about you. And can you tell me about Susie in accounting? Can you tell me about, the head of ops and her twin boys? They're professional skateboarders. You didn't know any of that. And that was part of the job. That's what we interviewed you for. Well, what do I care, Aaron? I'm not here for Taco Tuesdays. Well, at this company, you were interviewed under that premise. It was part of your job responsibility. It was make our home a better home, right? So financially, you won. But personally, our personal bucket, you failed because you didn't care. You know, I get that a lot. People go, well, but Aaron, I'm a bookkeeper. How can I professionally make this company better? Well, last year we had 90 days in collections and now we're at 45 days. Did that help us? And you started this new software system that you helped us hire another colleague in accounts receivable, who's a stud. You made us better professionally, right? And then how did you make us better personally? Well, man, I remember you bringing in those pastries. I remember every time you came in, you had a smile on your face. You always find a way to say, how was your weekend? And you mean it. You made when people came in the morning, they started with you. You made our environment and us personally better, right? Financially better. Professionally, you made us smarter, more efficient. So if you look at all those things, you can really, it's super simple to actually be able to go. And what happens a lot, people go, wow, I'm winning 10 out of 10, but I'm not giving back 10 out of 10. That happens. So like my company is doing all this for me and now I'm failing, or I'm not doing, it's not equitable. And so I think when you do that, obviously there's lots of things that happen. I think, half the battle is, well, how can I build a template for somebody, like accounting for all of these buckets, or someone that it's hard for the X's and O's? That might take some time, but you can do it. I mean, if you take the time, everybody has the opportunity to fill buckets at their company, personally, professionally, and financially. Some people need that coaching. Some people don't know. How do I know I'm winning? How do I know I'm winning, Aaron? Well, last year you took 10 days of vacation. This year you took 20. Last year, you weren't able to go see your parents, or you weren't be able to go out of the country, but now you did. So they need help developing that scoreboard. So, and what is, I guess, the quick answer to that is, as to enterprise value, recruitment and retention is real strong, right? So that's what you want. And also, I don't have to police anybody. My people police everybody. My people are all the PLUs that make sure that you're acting like a PLU. Even when I'm not.
Real quick, Alex, I love working with you, but I think I'm leaving to go work for Aaron.
Oh, yeah. Well, it's not all sexy, but I know it sounds great. I mean, there's other things that maybe that's another conversation or question, but it's not all perfect, right? What is one of the big things I think that I'll note for those people going, it sounds too good to be true, is that I find that you can't do this if you're not a growing company. If you're a lifestyle company, which is great, and you're making a good income as an owner or partner, and you have a good company and, with a good number of employees and a good quality of life, I commend it. It's just real for me. It'd be real hard to hire those amazing, talented PLUs because they're so talented. They're so dynamic. They get complacent. And if you don't fill those buckets, somebody else will. And that's what your responsibility is as the owner. And be cognizant of it. If you're not growing in this atmosphere, you're dying, and you won't be able to hire or retain or grow without grow your PLU network without growth in your company, right? Opportunity.
How does that, in our interview, you also mentioned that you really focus on liquidity of the company. Does that tie into it? Does that make you more more liquid as a company, where you have everyone that kind of, you don't necessarily have to be, you're growing, but you don't necessarily have to be involved because everyone else is kind of bringing up others.
You know, it's so funny. Everybody's hired under the same premise, right? They heard the same story of recruiting. We focus here at GDX on building a strong, all of our decisions are based on what increases enterprise value. What does that mean, Mr. Gare? Does that mean you're going to sell the company? No, it just means you have a great company. And if we do sell, it'll be for a good reason. Because what makes a great company is one that's well-diversed, one that has top line, bottom line growth, well diverse in their portfolio, one that has high culture, scale, profitability, competitive advantages. You know, these are all great traits for a great company. So if you make that decision of saying, okay, before I buy or invest in this person or this software or this office or this, you know, buy a company potentially or bring on this new division or start a new division or new vertical or new profit center, then you say, is that attractive for a buyer? And I find that if you go through that, you'll find your decision. You know, a lot of times I talk to entrepreneurs all the time. And in the end, when I scratch a little bit, I find out you just did it because it made you more money. But it really didn't increase your enterprise value. It increased your pocketbook today, but no one would buy that. You know, so that's short-term gain, long-term pain stuff, you know? Mm-hmm. And so, you know, and I think this is the biggest thing. PLUs don't get scared. I've had my assistant, who's like my little sister, early on, she would ask this question, but Aaron, everybody's gonna be scared. This amazing company with this amazing culture, and we're going to sell and we're going to lose all that. And I said, you know who's going to be scared? The people that don't create the value. Watch who runs and hides. It's the ones that I hope they don't come to my office. I hope they don't ask me what I do every day. And if you don't have that answer, you should be scared. But a PLU says, man, I can't wait till you come in. I can't wait to tell you what I do. And also, I know that Aaron is bringing this company in because he is here to fill my buckets. And if he thinks this person can help me fill my buckets, I'm in. And here's a big one that I get all the time. I want to buy your company, Aaron. It's attractive. You have all the things that I want, anybody wants, hopefully, right? As I said, your dance card should be full. Hopefully there's a long list, right? But how can I ever have your culture? I'm a big company. I have lots of employees. I'm scaling. I'm growing. You have a great asset. You have great value. You feed my core competency. You profitability. Your marketplace. Your competitive advantage. Whatever that is, right? But I'm not you, and I don't have a bucket thing, right? So the answer you will get from every one of my employees. And will be from me the same way. Well, that's your one job, is to fill my buckets. And if you have 1,000 employees or you have 10 employees, I'm in. Just tell me how you're going to fill those buckets, personally, professionally, and financially. And if you can't, then you're right. That's the pressure you have. But if you can, I'll work for you tomorrow. And so will my people. Because we're here to fill buckets. Whether I work for you or I own my own company, what do I care? That is a lot of pressure, but that's also the greatness of what you get and the transparency of you get. So what you got to do, from what I understand, is you're a big company, a growing company. Man, sounds like I'm going to learn a lot. If you're kicking ass and growing, there's a lot of opportunity for knowledge for me and my people, right? And growth comes profitability, I hope. So it sounds like I might be able to make some good money here. Because more value, more growth, more employees means opportunity for me, more bigger org chart, opportunity to go up that org chart, benefits and 401k and all the great things that do come with corporate America. Now, the big one, that you probably can't answer until I live with you. And that is, personally, do you have the culture? Do we think alike? Right? A lot of people will say that. And the only way I'm really going to find out is not until we get married. But it is something you have to do, something that you have to pay attention to if you want to buy our company, if you want to work with our people, right? Is make sure that we create that environment. And you know why you're going to let our people do all the vacations they can? Because they're going to create the value that justifies all those vacations. Because remember, that's in their three buckets. And you're going to go, man, how come that girl gets 1 month off and that girl only gets 2 weeks? Well, because they create the same value. Boy, when I get on my cell phone, my 12-year-old can blow me away on that cell phone, right? She knows 10 times more than I ever know. By the time it takes me to go do something on that cell phone, would take me an hour, would take her 5 minutes. So why should she have to sit and wait for me for another 55 minutes to finish my phone, just to find the app that I need to do something, because she's better at it, right? Why should she do that? It'd take me hours to do a PowerPoint presentation. If I did that and the girl next door did an hour, why should she sit and wait for me? So create value and you get the flexibility and the autonomy. You're asking the wrong question. It's not about how much you pay somebody. It's the value they create. And even I've talked to billionaires that still don't believe that. They still believe that I pay for this, I expect that. And I say, well, I don't pay. I pay for value. I don't pay by the hour, right?
Yeah, and I just want to quickly say, I think the only way that that system works is if you have nearly 100% of the employees and C-suites and everyone be PLUs. Otherwise, again, that's when people get pissed off and all that kind of stuff. So I think the only way it starts all the way at the interview process, getting these people in the door, and then, you know, the trickle-down effect beyond that is my guess with all that.
You know, it's funny. I, you know, if you look at my resume, I've worked with and, you know, sold and been around, you know, really smart people in big companies. And I remember one company in particular when we talked about putting out job descriptions. And I said, okay, let's put in there the buckets, personal, professional, financial bucket. And they went, Aaron, why? This is just a job description. All it is just going to say, can you do PowerPoint? Do you know accounting? Do you know accounting software? But, you know, it lists all the things we expect you to have before we interview you. And I go, what's the most important thing you think that we have and the most attractive thing we have in this company? And they said, your culture, your people, right? Now, what's the very first thing that this person's going to see when they take a look at the opportunity with our company? Are they going to see anything that has anything to do with our culture, our people, and our environment? No. They're going to see the job description that says, I need a VP of this, and this is what I need you to do, and can you do this, and do you have an experience in this? But what if I actually said, no, I need you to personally, professionally, and financially fill this position? Then remember that sales guy says, well, what do you mean? I make you money. Are you telling me I'm supposed to go to Taco Tuesdays? Yep. Remember the job description? Remember when we interviewed you? That was part of the value that we put here. There's a dollar here. Yep, you're exactly right. So you're going to fire me because I don't give a shit about the people, but I make the company a lot of money. Yeah, that's right. Because that's what you're supposed to do.
It's an amazing framework. And we've spoken to a number of other marketing agency owners that have considered acquisitions, that have been part of acquisitions, and the framework that you have for the PLUs and the buckets provides a good framework to ask those questions of people. And a lot of questions that these companies, it seems, didn't ask and ended up in sticky situations. So yeah, it's amazing that you have that, because it's a promise upfront, something that the employees agree to, and then on your end, something that you uphold. And to the point that the person you were talking about at your company was saying, like, you know, who's people might be scared of an acquisition. Well, an acquisition will likely happen either way if the company is growing at a certain rate. It's just a matter of to who and will it be the right fit. And we actually had a question come that I think you may be a good person to answer. One of our guests, Skylar Reeves, meets with a group, and they do this like open the books kind of discussion. One of the companies who was acquired said that they went through a PE process, and in the PE process of acquisition, they said that whether a company is all local or remote is a major factor in the valuation of a company. Can you talk about that? How is in your culture specifically, remote work? How was that valued? How do you see that for enterprise value?
Boy, that's a really good question. I think that I wrote an article about this, and you know, after COVID, about you know the work environment and what I believe to be the future work environment. And I say anybody says that they think they figured it out is full of shit. I think that we are still experimenting. I can give you my advice. My advice is that that for our business, a high culture business and a creative company, we like to see each other's faces. We like to collaborate. We like to be in whiteboards, and I like people to be in the office. But we don't, our policy is Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, around 10, be in the office till 2, maybe 3, right? And the rest, do your job. So it's so funny, these people, going back to those two people about vacation, it was crazy because I had actually asked them, would it be easier if I told you you had 2 weeks of vacation? That you knew those were your 2 weeks and you could actually take the 2 weeks, right? And if you think about it, it's crazy, right? How many vacation days do we have? As many as you want. That's hard to grasp. Like, when do you use it? You need coaching. So I guess in a roundabout way, what I'm saying is that a true PLU, hopefully, is not what you do in front of me. It's what you do behind my back, right? And really, again, whether it takes you 5 minutes or 10 hours, I don't care. As long as you create the value. And you can't hide from that. So, I know that's hard to grasp. It is hard. And I'm still learning that. Would I love everybody to be in the same office? I for sure I would. The camaraderie and the culture that comes with that is great. But the reality of a scaling company and finding PLUs, which is hard to do, you're going to have to hire from all over the place. And so how do you keep that, that team really close? Well, you have to do probably at least 2 trips where everybody comes together, in my mind, where you can renew those faces and names and those stories and those retreats. You know, we do a retreat. We try to do those twice a year. And then Zoom calls where we have everybody face to face. But the atmosphere that we create is one that is like an entrepreneur atmosphere. You manage yourself, and you can use us and plug and play as much as you need us, or as little as you need us. It's all depends on the value that you create. Geographic locations are important. I agree with that. It's nice to have somebody in your backyard in New York and you're a client in New York. I think there's value to that, at least in our business. So I think that is a tougher answer, but that's my answer would be true PLUs know how to manage their time because they're value-based. And so it doesn't matter where they're at.
And I appreciate, well, Alex, I think that was a great question. I appreciate the response because again, we told you right before we jumped on kind of the goal for this is to get this community started and trying to support the other guests that we had. So it's really nice to kind of connect to previous guests and kind of get an answer from you. And then, obviously we can go back to them and see, does it make sense? Do you guys have the bandwidth to connect? Does it make sense? All that kind of stuff. So I appreciate that. And then the last question I want to ask, because I know we're running out of time here and I have a few questions that standard questions that I ask at the end. But selfishly, I wanted to ask this question. You mentioned earlier, that you see the best in people, and that's typically why you're not a good interviewer, actually. Mm-hmm. And I want to read another quote from another article that I pulled, that I really connected with. And you were talking about mindset and said, maintaining an optimistic mindset is my most valuable tool when it comes to work and in life. To have the most powerful mindset is It's important to maintain a work-life balance and take care of my physical body as well as my mental well-being. And, you know, you wrote later, you know, a fit body equals a fit mind. The question, I guess, that I have here is, you know, I'm also a very optimistic person. And as an optimistic person, you always get those people telling you, especially my old co-founders, you know, it's unrealistic and you should be more pessimistic. But, you know, of course, they never use that word. The word that they always use is realistic.
Yeah.
So what do you tend to say to those type of people?
I think that just in general, and you know, this is nothing new. If you go through life and you start with that people have good intentions, that people are authentic and real in what they say and what they believe, you start with yes, you start with trust until they prove you wrong, we live in an incredibly cynical world where everything we do tells you to be cynical and to question and lock your doors and do these things. But man, that's a tough life. I think that's a really tough life. And I'm not one of those guys that, you know, I don't know, The Secret, and that you have to do these, you know, skipping daisies and, you know, butterflies and rainbows every day. I try to be a realist. I can say with passion and conviction that for myself and my family and my colleagues, that if you go out every day and you consciously think about the good things that come from any situation, you'll not only be a lot happier, but you'll find that there is a ton of good lessons to be learned, but you just didn't give yourself the time to think about it. It's super easy. What is a lot of the people do in this world? They automatically say, what's his agenda? What's her agenda? What are they getting at? Where are they going with this? Well, what happens if there is no agenda? What happens if it's actually genuine? And you give them the benefit of the doubt. You know, we did this exercise recently, and I think you guys would enjoy it. It's something I just came up with. I said, if you take early on in your life, in your 20s, maybe early 30s, I'm an old guy, I'm 53. So, and you write down all those five things that really, those horrific things, you know, the girl left you. You didn't make the team, you didn't get hired for that job, you got hurt in football, you know, whatever that, those things that you think back and you go, man, that sucked at that time. It was devastating. And then you look back now, and if you look at, and you say to yourself, what are the five like best things going on in my life right now? I bet you'll directly be able to find out just how they correlated, just how those things were the best things that ever happened to you. You know, I think I mentioned, and one of the things with, you know, my wife and I have a special needs daughter. You know, she's born with Apert syndrome. So she lives in hospitals, many surgeries, a trach, G-tube, nurse care. The first thing I thought when my wife called me and said, our life's going to change, leaving the hospital, bawling, crying, our life's going to change. The first thought I had was, what an amazing story that we have, that my kids have, that I can tell everybody and say, look at us. We're going to Mount Everest. We're going to climb this mountain that not everybody wants to do, but we get to do it. And we get to tell everybody that we do it and we're doing it. And they can't. You don't have our story. That's our story. Everybody has that. And I believe that. And I use it as bragging rights. I'm using it right now. I've earned that right to say that because I go through it every day and it sucks, but man, I get that ribbon. I get that medal. I get to tell everybody that I get to do that. And that's pretty cool. And I think if people do that, they will live a lot happier life. They'll be far more successful and they will see that everything that happens that's horrific in their life, if it's harnessed correctly, could be the best lesson they've ever learned and serve them really well.
Oh, well, you are right that first, I appreciate you sharing that. And two, you're right that just triggered, like, I can't go too far. I know we're at the end of time, so I can't go too far into these topics, but you hit some of my favorite topics, which I forget where I heard this, but that they say that optimist in is usually an optimist out. So, you know, if you are an optimistic person going into an event, you know, whether it's a tragic event or whatever it is, those are the people that actually end up being an optimistic person, even when they have, you know, whatever they ran into. So yeah. I think that's everything, to be honest, because, you know, you always wonder, oh, what if, you know, what if this happens? Well, like, honestly, from wherever I heard this, optimistic in is optimistic out. The other thing is, you know, I think motivation is so hard to find for a lot of people, for everyone.
Yeah.
And I have, you know, I won't go too far into this, but, you know, I have this like personal quote that's find motivation wherever you can and then maximize it. Cause people aren't, they don't bring awareness towards motivators. And when you bring a lot of awareness towards motivators, that's when you start maximizing them. And I have this theory called like half-life of motivation also, which says that a lot of that power that you get from motivation is going to be in that first day, that first hour, that first, whatever it happens. And then it actually kind of trickles down after that. And if you don't grab it, that motivation in that first half-life, a lot of times you actually lose the benefit that you could get in whatever gave you that motivator. So I think that was, I really appreciate you sharing that. The other thing, I don't know how I tied this in, but I guess I thought it was, you know, there's just this ability to trust your future self. And when you start to trust your future self in whatever situation you're in, it just, whether it's stress, you know, it takes away stress or whatever it is, it just allows you to move forward without like always looking behind and everything. So I think those are just like the few bullet points that I ran through. I will give you an opportunity to.
And it's okay to make mistakes. And you know, I just read this the other day, you know, that's what another thing, paralysis through analysis, you know, that happens a lot. Super smart people. My wife is brilliant. 4.6 grade point, UCLA, studied in Spain, when the University of Barcelona, you know, she suffers from a simpleton like me. I can make quick decisions, but she's a paralysis through analysis. And my answer is, look, there's nothing we can't fix. You can make any mistake. It's all fixable. I promise you. So I would rather you just go do it than continue to grind. And just, you make the mistakes. It's okay, because we're going to learn and we're going to be better. So just go do it. I tell my people, there's nothing you could do to blow this up. We're not curing cancer. We're not saving lives. We're out there to do ad campaigns and help our customers and our brands, but you can do no wrong. We're going to do right by it. And the other, one of my other big motivations is, you've heard this a lot, is, you know, I love hugging up on people that believed in me, right? Nothing better than saying thank you, mom, dad, or whoever that is, right? But it's a little sweeter to prove people wrong. And that's just, that might be the tough, cynical part that I do have. Man, I love proving people wrong. I love saying, man, I didn't think that dumb wrestler would do that. I love that. Man, that wrestler, he really made a company? He really? Yep, he did. Everything that you didn't think he'd do, he did. And that feels really good. Feels really
good. Yeah. Another topic we've talked about on this. I call it fuck you motivation.
I mean, you don't want to go that far, but hey, let's face it. It does feel good, right?
Good. I have this whole obsession of motivation. You know, which one's more powerful, a good positive motivator, a positive motivator or an FU motivator? And as much as I want to pretend like the positive motivators are stronger, it tends to be the FU motivators are the stronger ones.
I had a whole company in that field of medical, medical, as you know, diabetes, obesity. I sold that to Cigna, and my IP was motivation. And it's two things, it's carrot or the stick. And you're right. The stick works better. Fear,
well said.
Losing eyesight. Fear of dying from diabetes, fear of losing your leg is far stronger than saying, hey, dad, I want you to walk me down the aisle, get off the couch and stop eating cheeseburgers. That's powerful, right? I want you to be there for my grandkids. I want my kids to have a grandpa. That's powerful. But when somebody says, look, you're going to lose your eyesight and we're going to have to take your leg, ooh, that's real powerful. That's more powerful.
Yeah, I appreciate you just for moving in that direction because you hit a lot of my favorite topics. So a few questions that we ask at the end. Again, this is a lot for the community and hopefully getting you guys referrals or vice versa. How can you work with other marketing agencies or what services can you partner with other agencies? So in other words, you know, what do agencies tend to reach out to you for?
Yeah, that's a loaded question. But yeah, we deliver campaigns in delivering experiences for brands, brand engagements. We believe that experiences are the one and only media form that when done right, amplify all other media. So when you do the It House and you scare the shit out of 35,000 people, what do I get? Social media, content, PR, market research, digital. I also get insights, unique insights, all from this petri dish of this experience. So brands come to us as a one-stop shop. They say, what should I do as that experience? So we're the ideation, we're the strategy, we're the execution. We hammer the nails and we're the results. So, and we usually work with CMOs at the highest level because we are the driver to all media. There is no other media product that you can buy or do that actually, I don't know any digital campaigns that were on the news in PR. I don't know any, you know, commercials that have content, authentic content. We do authentic content. So, you know, PR market research, I don't know how much market research you get from a commercial, but we can get it in real life and real unique insights. So brands, we usually work direct with brands. And we are the one-stop shop in delivering experiences and then harnessing all the value that come from those experiences.
Perfect answer. And now to turn the question around kind of, you know, if a client asks you, can you do this and it's a service that you don't currently provide, how do you typically handle that request?
I'm really disciplined on saying no. I see value in everything. And that's the curse of an entrepreneur. But staying focused on your core competency is important. So I have an amazing network that when I call, they answer because I don't waste their time. So, and I've already vetted them out. So yeah, if I give referrals, two things I'll do. I'm real good at, I'll say yes when I have the right to win. And I'm real disciplined in saying no when someone can do a better job. And then I'll lead you to those people that I have in my network that hopefully I have in my network, that you can then go and that know that they'll be vetted out and that you'll have a, you know, first in line, so to speak.
I might have to ask you for another episode because my favorite topic is what makes a successful person. And what I've boiled it down to, I think, is motivation, discipline, and self-awareness. And I can't tell you how many times that you've said those words individually, you know, and so I might just have to, I can't do it now, but I might have to steal some more of your time and dive into those. But next question, three more. If you were listening to this show, what topics would you like us to cover?
You know, I think about public speaking, and which I love. And I think where a lot of people make a mistake is they don't talk about their failures. And so for me, I like hearing about, okay, when did you hit a wall? And then how did you get around that wall? And, you know, it's so funny because it's easy to talk about success, right? It's easy to talk about, well, I did this and I closed that account and I grew this business and I did that. And everybody's got their story and there's amazing stories, but you really find out how people think when you actually put them in a position of saying, okay, what did you do when shit hit the fan? How did you react? And I think that would be invaluable for me. I love learning. I always say, man, I love hearing people say, great job. But I don't learn a lot from that. I want to know. I want you to poke holes in me. I want you to challenge me. I want you to ask me tough questions. And if I don't have the answer, I want you to call me out on it. So asking those entrepreneurs that you have and those people, I know what you're good at, but I want to hear how you took failure and how you dealt with failure and what came of that.
two things there. One, I literally added a question to my template that I ask in my discovery call about. It says, when you hit a wall, when did you hit a wall, and how did you get around that wall? So I love that question so much. I just throw it into my template. A strategy that I do, and again, more on the entrepreneurial side, is even if you tell people like, where, you know, why isn't this good or whatever, people are still usually too scared to give their honest response. So what I do actually is I ask a different question. I say, if this is going to fail, why? And people feel very comfortable answering that question, as opposed to like, what am I doing wrong? Because then they like feel like they're attacking you. But when you say, why is this going to fail? There's only one way to answer that question. There's no getting around that question without answering it directly. So that's been a really good practice that I've tested is asking, if this is going to fail, why? So even if that's a marketing campaign, if that's a company, if that's a concept, whatever it is, that's tend to what I would do. Are you guys looking to hire any positions right now?
Yeah. We're always looking. Hopefully we're always in a position to hire. We have four divisions. We have a creative and strategy division. So we're always looking for those types of people. Account management, is another side of the business. Operations, you know, I call them MacGyvers, people that can go do the never been done before and manage an operational team to build out and execute events and experiences. And then we have, the results division, which is, immersive tech, and how does immersive tech how's that used in experiences? How can you track ROI? Like, how can you actually have an ROI around an event, not impressions, ROI? So, it's the results driven portion of our business. What did I get from this? Right. So we do have, you know, PR, social, content, market research, analytics as part of our offering, but people shouldn't call us we're not a PR company. We do PR experiences. We could be a PR company, and our resume would say we're a PR company, but we're real disciplined and saying, no, we create the experience and the byproduct is the PR in that order. Right. So like we did the giant sunflowers in the middle of Union Square, recognizing the lost lives of the Ukrainian war effort. That was one of the biggest PR campaigns in the country. We won a number of awards for it. Well, we're not a PR company, but we created the engagement and experience that then became an earned media vehicle, and we harnessed that, right? So those are the four divisions that we're always looking for, people in those four verticals.
Perfect. And then last question, any books, podcasts, or newsletter recommendations?
I think I told you guys this. It's something that I need to do a better job.
My wife, you know what? Yeah. I had a comment. It says like, don't read for some reason. It says,
it's not that. I hate saying that. It's so arrogant. It's so like, because it's not, because I love talking to guys like you. I love like learning from other people. Like I really do. And I get a lot every time. I get a ton of value, but, I want what I say to you and what I'm doing to come. It's always served me well to just come innate. Something that I tell people it's really sophisticated. It's called common sense. You know, treating people well is common sense, right? Creating an atmosphere that makes them want to come to work, that's common sense. And then maybe taking it further and how can we create that environment? It's common sense. So I like to just use that. I don't want to regurgitate somebody else's stuff. But man, I've never found that balance. Hopefully I will, because I enjoy learning from others. I really, really do. I just get distracted easily, and I don't want to adopt something that doesn't come innate for me.
Yeah. I call that a virgin brain. I say, you know, like the only way you can get totally original and new thoughts is by not diving into old thoughts that have already been said. So that's my little silly phrase for that. As we come up to the end of the episode, I just want to give you an opportunity to mention how people can find you and anything else you'd like to end with.
Yeah. GDXstudios.com is our website. A G A E I R or A Gare at gdxstudios.com. You can always reach me there. I think obviously through the podcast with you guys, hopefully they'd have my cell phone and email, my LinkedIn as well. But I'm real good on email. And I love meeting people because I love people. So please, we're all busy, but I love getting, emails or texts from people that might have listened and that maybe I can help them. It makes me feel good to create value for them. And if there's value that I can harness, hey, even better, right?
Perfect. And thank you so much for coming on the show. And for those of you who have learned something new from this episode, please consider giving us a like or a follow so we can continue getting the highest quality of guests. And as always, thank you for listening, Aaron. This was a total home run episode. I really appreciate the time. Thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you guys. Thank you. I enjoyed it.
Thanks for listening to the Masters in Marketing Agency podcast. I hope you got a ton of value out of this episode. And before we go, I just want to thank our sponsors, DevNoodle. DevNoodle provides marketing agencies with the ability to offer their clients unlimited website design, build, and management services with fixed monthly plans. If website design, development, and maintenance is holding your agency back from growing, please reach out to us at devnoodle.com, where we make websites easy for you and easy for your clients. devnoodle.com.